Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. Today is a great day as we're interviewing Ben Lamb. Ben has had a really interesting career, which has taken him all over the world, working in industrial automation and cybersecurity. He's here today to talk about his new business, Cyber Industrial Networks. So hi, Ben. Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's great to see you today. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No worries. So can you give the audience a bit of a rundown in terms of your career to date and how you've come about starting this new company of yours?
I'd love to. It's a bit of a hard career to describe. I guess most people in the Newcastle area will have come across systems integrators in the industrial space. So that's really my bread and butter. I started whilst doing a uni degree with a company called Advanced Systems Integration in Newcastle.
Okay.
And they made their own radio telemetry equipment. They did a lot of work with the mining industries.
Are they still around? Water.
No, they're unfortunately not. I've got a lot of respect for the gents that ran that business. They taught me a lot. They became part of the MapTech brand
along the way.
I went through those guys and learned a lot about electronics and circuit board design and radio antenna design and a lot of sort of really nitty-gritty old school now technology, I guess. It has stood me in good stead even to this day. You know, I think a lot of that grounding, some of the newer generations don't get to get down to that level. They don't have to anymore. It was a great grounding, and I learned so much through my time there. When I left those guys, I joined the old Hunter Water Tech business out of Cardiff, and I was worked with them for about 5 years. And during that time, I was lucky enough to, do a stint in the Middle East for those guys in Abu Dhabi for about 3 years.
Wow, when was that?
That was in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting time. There was still conflict bubbling in Iraq and all of those sorts of things.
Wow, what was it like living over there?
I loved it. I had a bit of a love-hate relationship, to be fair, to the place. You miss a lot of the simple things that we take for granted, particularly here in Newcastle. The ease of getting out and going to the beach, the outside lifestyle we have here. Over there during summer, it's nudging 50 degrees. You don't really want to be outside.
Yeah.
There's some great beaches, but they're normally associated with hotels, which you have to pay money to get access to. So there's a lot to like about living over there. Proximity to Europe was great. Travel was great. Money was good. But, some of the simple stuff of just being able to go and sit in your backyard is what I missed over there.
Yeah, definitely.
They're a really good expat community. Oh, fabulous. Yeah.
That was when you were working for Hunter Water then?
Hunter Water Tech.
Okay.
And during that time they took on the UK business, Cert Controls, and took their name here in Newcastle. So most people would probably know Cert Controls more than the old Hunter Water Tech sticker. So I was there during that brand change. So when I came back, it was Cert Controls here, and I worked for about another 12 months here on water and wastewater projects that they had going on, and it was a great business and a great experience, and I'm very, very appreciative of the opportunities that business gave me to, I guess, take on my first international travel for work. I think I'm pretty fortunate as a kid from Newcastle to have been given those opportunities and go and have those experiences. Anyone who's gets those opportunities waved in front of them in this tech industry coming out of Newcastle, just grab it with both hands and go.
Yep.
You'll never regret it. It'll be hard. It'll be challenging. But, it's certainly something that I look back on, look back at the trepidation, I guess, I had at the time and question the validity of my thinking a bit, I guess. At the time it was daunting but very much worthwhile. So I came back from those guys with, again, a lot of water and wastewater experience, a bit of petrochemical experience over there in the gas plants and stuff.
Okay.
Which was interesting. A lot of, I guess, experience in dealing with other cultures and other ways of doing business and security clearances for oil fields and just working in a different country gives you a healthy respect for, I guess, how easy a lot of business that we do in Australia is, how easily we relate to Australians doing business as an Aussie. But it taught me a lot about not to have those assumptions and preconceived ideas, I guess. So, yeah, it was really good and I made lifelong friends through that experience. The expat community over there is pretty strong. So.
Yeah, and I can imagine over there doing business would be their way.
Yes. And it is very different. There's a lot that is negotiated and, you know, it taught me a lot about keeping an eye on scope of projects and timelines of projects and don't let death by a thousand cuts creep in. The place definitely works on, I think the word was WASTA, not what you know, but who you know. So there's a lot of that over there, which is fine. It's how the place works and they get plenty of stuff done as a result. So, but it was an eye-opener for me understanding all of that.
Yeah, great.
So I came back from those guys and did a bit more with the Cirque business and then I was fortunate enough to join a fledgling systems integrator called Primatech.
I know them well.
Yeah, I thought you might. Primatech, which became Primatech QDA, so... I joined that business as employee number one.
What did the QDA stand for?
It was Quality Data Australia.
That's right.
So that was through some mergers of Quality Data and Rang Systems that came in, I guess, about 5 years into its life, amalgamated the name into Primatech QDA.
We talked earlier, we know quite a few people.
There's quite a few people out of that era.
We had on the podcast earlier.
Yeah, Clint Bruin, John Watson, plenty of guys out of that era that are now scattered around the industry still.
Still at Amp Control, isn't he?
Yeah, he's also doing some work with the Melt, I think, as well.
Okay, yeah.
So that was a great emerging business, I guess. Early on, we were a very small, tight-knit team. The beauty of a small, agile little business is there's no place for B-graders. Everyone has to carry their weight and get it done. I have a lot of respect for the general manager of that business, Sean Smith. He taught me a lot. He's renowned for being direct, and I'm sure he wouldn't care that I said that. but it certainly taught me a lot about owning your work, owning the outcome of your work. Don't shy away from the responsibility of having a problem. Put your hand up early and talk about it and get it resolved.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a great business for that. That tenure lasted for about 9 years.
Wow, I didn't know that they were around for that long before they were bought.
Yeah, I was trying to think. It's 8-9 year mark somewhere. Amp Control acquired them.
Back in the days when they didn't call them startups.
That's right. They were just new businesses, I guess. Yeah, so then went through the Amp Control acquisition and became part of the Amp Control automation team. So by the time I joined as a senior control systems engineer, and when I departed, I had held the roles of principal engineer and engineering manager. And through that period, we tackled everything from coal washeries to train loaders to stackers and reclaimers to cottonseed plants to you name it, we would tackle it. Mm. And the beauty of the Amp Control acquisition was it got us exposure back into the international market. So we had colleagues out of the UK, out of Hong Kong. So we took on projects with our UK counterparts delivering mining machinery control systems into Russia. So we managed to get to Russia and have a look around in Russia. And
what was that like?
It was fabulous. I'd love to go back and have a proper holiday style look around.
Not in winter, maybe.
No. Well, yeah. I always joke when I went to Russia, I left here in what was it late October, I guess. Mid-20s, shorts and T-shirts sort of weather. 40-something hours later, I walked out of an airport at the other end after flying around the world and back again, and it was minus 15.
Wow.
And I'll never forget it. There was an old MiG fighter on the stand in the car park, and I thought, well, I'm not in Newcastle any longer. but, yeah, those sorts of experiences are the highlights of my career and what this
– It's amazing to have those experiences working and travelling around the world.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to be able to get that far and see places like central Russia with Siberia to the north and, the heart of Russia's manufacturing facilities. So, yeah, it's been a pretty wild ride on some of those things. Mm. So that was the beauty of the Amp Control era. I was – fortunate enough to leave Amp Control to join Rockwell Automation. I spent about 3 years with those guys. And really what they came looking to me for up until that point, I guess I was the generalist control systems engineer, had PLC, SCADA, reporting systems, all of that sort of stuff under my belt. But what I guess grown a bit of a liking to and a bit of a reputation for was dealing with the networking side of things.
Okay.
So during my time at Amcontrol, I was dealing a lot with the guys at Rockwell and at Cisco, and Rockwell approached me to look after their networking and cybersecurity team for Australia and New Zealand. So I jumped at that after a lot of consideration. It was pretty hard to leave.
So you wanted to then specialise?
I guess go down that specialisation route. I hadn't had the option to do it prior, I guess. And I guess that role was a little bit more sales-driven as well rather than engineering-driven. So I was curious to explore that a bit and see what that meant. And it was a great company for the breadth of clients and, you know, Rockwell Automation. You know, there's Rockwell, there's Schneider, there's Siemens in our corner of the world. You know, most sites have got one of those systems on there. So, you know, with that Rockwell sticker, there's not too many places you can't go and look at. So it got me travelling from one end of Australia to the other end of New Zealand, looking at everything from, again, mines to Mars bar factories to hydro power stations to all sorts of to logging mills in New Zealand.
You get to learn about a lot of different businesses then.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I sort of woke up to late in my career, was the power of a good engineer in this game isn't how good an engineer you are. It's how well you can understand your customer's business and what they want for the money they're spending. Yeah. And if you roll that down the hill, then that comes into understanding the equipment you're controlling or making work and how much money they've got to get out of it.
And that's where the value is.
Yeah. So I sort of pride myself on that, and I sort of nag that into anyone I come across in this game, is you can teach people to write code, but what you've got to learn is what the machine's doing, what the customer needs, what's making them money, and then make sure you align to that within the bounds of your scope. And you'll have a happy customer. So, yeah, so that was that era. So Rockwell had me travelling around the world. I got to Mongolia with Rockwell to look at a big copper mine in Mongolia, and also over into South America, into Chile, and into North America for some of the technical events. So that, again, was a lot of consulting engineering work on networks and cybersecurity and design and architecture. And I guess really what proved in my mind the value of the work that the new business, which I'll get to in a minute, is here to do. Everywhere I went and saw, there was so many people with such massive investment in manufacturing and processing facilities, and there was a common thread. The thing that always let them down was the communications and the networks and the security and the architecture. So that was Rockwell, and I met a lot of very smart people there all the way through their, you know, product teams and development teams and their roadmaps, and those guys, they know their stuff, and I had a lot of fun being a proper nerd talking to those guys and picking their brains about what they were thinking and learn a lot. So I left there and I've just completed a 2-year stint with Safe Group. They offered me a job to run New South Wales State Engineering Team, which I was happy to do. And it felt a little bit like coming home back to the SI community after being, I guess, on the evil side of the fence as a vendor trying to hock hardware. So I've really enjoyed that experience working with the Safe Group team. They're a small integrator here, well, good size integrator here in Newcastle to be exact. And they do a lot of water and wastewater work, so a lot of telemetry networks, a lot of radio stuff. So again, very similar to where I started in the industry, and a lot of the guys that I was working again with at Safe Group were through that Hunter Water Tech Cert Controls era. So a lot of familiar faces, which was nice.
Good.
So that's really my career and what I've been doing. But yeah, now we're on to the next exciting chapter, I guess.
Your own business, which you stood up in May.
Only in May.
Very new business.
Yeah, very new business.
What sort of was the motivation behind that?
Well, the motivation was really reflecting on what I was seeing in my time at Rockwell around the problems so many industries were facing in the current landscape with reliability of their systems being impacted by their networks and communication systems. Mm-hmm. And again, we hear it daily on the news, cybersecurity, and cybersecurity. The hard part for a lot of these guys, and part of the reason I wanted to start this business, is they don't know where to start to apply cybersecurity to their production systems without breaking them. Yeah. At the end of the day, the order of value is different in an IT system versus an operational system. You know, operations is king. IT, typically confidentiality and availability come up the food chain on their order. But, in the operational systems, if that plant's not running, it's not making money.
Mm.
So it's a real challenge for a lot of people. And I think why I want to start this business is there's a good, tight-knit little community which I hope to foster and grow and bring capability to the market of people who have got solid control systems experience. Mm. but I always joke about it, can also speak IT. It's pretty common in that, in those plants, to see a gap in the technology teams, which is odd because, you know, we hear it, Nui tech people. There is some divisions in the IT and the OT worlds. Control systems engineers and then the IT departments. They don't always see eye to eye, and really what it comes down to is that difference in drivers for their performance. So I've spent a lot of effort, I guess, over the years in working with IT and OT teams, I guess, to span that divide, try and get the teams together, try and get a solution that everybody's happy with, and then you get to do the fun part of rolling the solution out and seeing the proof in the pudding. So that's really, I guess, the primary focus of the new business.
And can you tell us the name of your new business?
I can. It's Cyber Industrial Networks, which is a real mouthful. Anyone who started a business, try registering a business name and do better for me.
It's so hard to come up with a business name.
Yeah, it is. So as a good friend of mine said, he said, yeah, just abbreviate it to Cynet. And I said, well, it sort of sounds a bit like Skynet out of Terminator, and we can run with that. So Cynet for short.
But it does perfectly describe what your business is.
It does. And at the end of the day, I'm an engineer. I'm not going to proclaim to be a wordsmith. So we'll just roll with the blunt title for the time being.
There's a couple of good apps, actually. I'm currently mentoring a couple of student groups for a challenge they're doing for university. So there's a groups of students from international, so mainly Australian universities, but there's international students as well, and they've all come up with this idea and they've got to think of a name. So I've just sent them all these links to these apps. Just
oh,
like,
really?
I'm not here to create the name for your...
I wish I'd spoken to you a couple of months ago.
No, there's some pretty good apps that come up with, you can put in a few keywords that describes your business and it'll just spit out all these names.
Yeah, we had a great, nice, short, succinct business name and procrastinated in registering and someone else took it. So, yeah, it is what it is. Yeah.
Very exciting. So it's yourself and
one other business partner.
Business partner.
Yeah.
And where did you work together, obviously, in a past life?
Yeah, we have. So Jess brings a lot of business management and project management experience.
Okay.
So she's brings that knowledge and experience of all the fun stuff under the covers that engineers like me typically don't want to have to think about in running a business, administering the books, bring the finances. So she's keeping us on the straight and narrow from that point of view. And my remit, I guess, is to get out there and talk to people and see what problems they've got that I can help them solve.
And what can you tell us about some of the customers that you're working with at the moment?
So we've got existing clients that we're working with that are coming out of the mining industry. So we've got, and oddly enough, here in Newcastle, the mining clients I've got at the moment aren't heavily coal. I've got a bit of a mixed bag. I've got one of the mining clients here is in the Hunter Valley. I won't name them, of course. And another one is a gold miner out of Australia that operates an operation in West Africa.
Okay. And you recently went...
I did.
To West Africa.
I did.
During these times, which would have been an eye-opener and you would have been, I guess, nervous
of course.
The current situation that's going on. So tell us about that trip.
Yeah, so last October, it's an Australian-owned mining company. They operate an operation in West Africa. Had problems on their site with their communication system stopping their plant. So we were asked whether we could do an audit of their system. So I guess a bit like anyone who's an IT guy or a network dude listening to this, you know, you do network audits all day, every day, but we had to have a bit of a look at the control system and how old it was, you know, if something died, could they get a replacement? A bit of a life cycle analysis on it. But what made it fun was the fact that it was in Mali in Africa and in the middle of COVID. So we went through a lot of discussions with those guys about the logistics, whether it was possible, DFAT paperwork would have to go through, all of those mechanisms, plus the constantly shifting landscape of airlines shutting down air routes and all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we had to go through a pretty extensive medical process to go over there, because once you go to one of these remote sites, the client has to accept you and all of your medical conditions, if you have any, a very heavy vaccination process to get over there. I was a pincushion for a while. Yeah, I joke with my kids now. I think I'm fireproof now for the number of vaccines I've had. Yeah, that's right. I'm good. I'm right. Yeah, it was a big logistical challenge to get over there.
Did you, like, how long did it take to get there? Did you have to go via other places to get flights? And
we flew from Sydney to Singapore, from Singapore then to got to stop and think now, Heathrow. Heathrow to Paris, and then Paris into Mali, into Bamako, and then a charter flight out to the site.
Wow.
And it was amazing for anyone who's been through those airports. They're all busy airports. They're all ghost towns, like shops shut, lights out, dark. Yeah. Except for Paris, oddly, when we were there, it was business as usual.
Wow.
So very interesting experience. Obviously, Africa comes with its own security challenges that the site deal with and deal with well. You know, their own private security. They take their management of things like COVID very, very seriously. And they have a pretty competent medical team on site.
You mentioned they were Australian-owned.
Australian-owned.
And that's why they've asked an Australian to come over, which
yeah.
is great.
Yeah, which is, again, it's a fabulous experience to have, but also a little bit daunting in the fact that, you know, you can't help but think surely there's someone closer who's can do what I can do that can go and do this stuff. So
lots of pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
That's great.
Yeah, so it was a really good experience, a big eye-opener. It was my first adventure into northwest Africa. The people were warm and friendly, but the security landscape and living conditions that the general population live in are very different to what we have here. Made me very appreciative to come home and had the joy of 2 weeks in quarantine in Adelaide on the way home. So,
I know we talked about that earlier, how lucky we have it here, and you've obviously experienced lots of different countries and cultures and seen how other people live, and we've got nothing to complain about, do we?
No, we're going pretty good. We really are. We really are. Yeah, it's a big wide world out there, and yeah, I'm never disappointed to get off a plane in Sydney or Melbourne and be home.
Well, you've obviously, you know, been to a lot of different countries, and tell us about that experience with
Africa,
and that was just recently, obviously.
Yes. So last October. I was fortunate enough to head towards Africa. The story I tell is about on the way out of Africa, we had to have COVID tests done. Most of the airlines wanted to see proof of a COVID test before they would board you.
Yeah.
You can imagine what the airlines system's like in the middle of a pandemic. It's masks and separation and everything else going on.
Were you nervous about flying in a full plane? Was it the plane
the
full?
The planes were empty.
Really?
Empty.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're making money. Yeah, I really, really don't. But, yeah, it was a nice time to fly. Like, you weren't crowded and food services were prompt because the plane was empty. So it actually was a good time to fly, apart from, you know, the global pandemic risk element. But yeah, on the way out of Mali, as I said, we had to stop for our COVID test in Bamako City. So we arrived at the airport and got into a minibus and were, you know, shuttled into the hotel and got to have a really good look at the city and other countries. And again, that whole healthy appreciation for here and home. Mm. That capital, Bamako, there's a lot of tin sheds. You know, the main roads are tarred and all the side streets aren't. All the basics that we have here, you know, sanitation and garbage collection, it's there, but it struggles. Choked roadways with people on scooters and, people sitting in the backs of utes to get where they're going and all that sort of stuff. But they put us into a hotel for a couple of days. It's in the nice part of town in the embassy district. All tarred roads everywhere there. And I'll never forget, came around the corner and there's this little concrete bridge over a muddy-looking creek. And the bus pulled up on that as the gates in front of the bridge opened and they had razor wire on top of them. And the gates opened and out came an armed guard. And at that point you sort of realised there was another armed guard sitting in a hut off to the side.
Mm.
And then out came another two, one with a mirror on a stick looking under the car and another one with a bomb sniffer dog who did a lap of the car.
Even if you're not guilty of anything, you'd still be nervous. That's
right. Exactly right. I haven't got any sunscreen that smells like explosives. And at that point, we were rattling from the amount of medication we'd had for anti-malarials and stuff as well. But, so they circled the car and that was okay. And they drove the car and shut the gate behind. There was an inner gate in front of it. They got us all out and the sniffer dog sniffed us all over. And then we all walked into an airport security hut. So x-ray machine, wands, and then the bag x-ray.
They would have had quite big machine guns, I imagine.
Yeah, they weren't playing. So then you get through that, you put your bag through, and then you walk out of all of that and you're into this courtyard of a hotel with flowers and fountains and music playing and you've stepped into a different world.
Parallel universe.
Yeah. You walk into the hotel and it's a lovely, you know, 4-star hotel and everyone's friendly and your room's smiling. Waiting for you, smiling.
No one's pointing a gun at you.
No, that's right. there's no sniffer dogs any longer. But a beautiful hotel with a courtyard in the middle and swimming pools and fountains. And you go to your room and you open it and it's, you know, it's lovely, you know, nice modern room, everything you'd expect, pay TV and free Wi-Fi. And,
yeah.
And then you realise that there's no windows on the outside of your room. The windows only face the centre of the courtyard.
And to maintain the image.
Yeah, well, and it's actually we actually made some inquiries and it was deliberately built to be attack-proof from the outside.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's where, you know, foreign dignitaries and people would stay for security reasons. Mm. So that's the thing that always strikes me outside of Australia is the stark contrast between parts of society, I guess, different people in society and the security and the wealth and the lack of wealth. And, yeah, it's very, very confronting. Mm. So we're there for a couple of days and had the pleasure of Bamako's main hospital for a COVID swab test. And I think I'm going to put my COVID result. It was a paper handwritten sheet with official stamps all over. I think that's going to go in a frame for the office wall.
Yeah, good.
For later, and that then we got to the airport and flew out, and on the way back it was via Ethiopia, Heathrow, Singapore, and then into Adelaide for quarantine for 2 weeks.
Wow, you've certainly travelled to some dangerous places.
Interesting places.
Interesting places, yeah. I think the most dangerous place I ever went to was the morning SARS broke out. I flew into Hong Kong.
Oh, really? Yeah, wow.
That was like, you know, I think I was 26 at the time, yeah. And I was working for Disney, and I didn't care. I didn't have any kids. So I just wasn't bothered. I was bulletproof. That's right. Went to the ladies' markets, bought 11 handbags.
Nice.
It was only really towards the end of the stay I probably started taking it a bit seriously.
Starting to get a little bit more concerned.
I had to get my handbags first.
Yeah, that's right. You got to have priorities. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's all part of the fun of traveling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just hope we get this current pandemic under control and we can get back to it.
I know. More travel. So tell us about the plans for your business and what you guys want to achieve.
Yeah. Well, I guess the objective is to grow a business that has the capability I spoke of, been able to plug that gap between IT and OT where people are wrestling with it in their businesses. And I'm really aiming at the industrial market. I mean, my background is industry. I'm not going to wade into an enterprise environment and try and tell an enterprise architect how to suck eggs. However, in the industrial space, I think I've got some value to add on what the systems underneath need. I've done a lot of work with Cisco and all the tier one network vendors. So I think I bring a perspective to that landscape that maybe sometimes the operational guys don't bring. They're not been exposed to those enterprise grade solutions and scale solutions. So they're not really aware of the complications that they can bring to an IT department through making design choices in their operational systems. So I guess that's where I like to get involved. I like to ensure that neither party makes pain for either side. And that way IT is comfortable with the platforms that are there. And helping manage them is obviously what the operational guys would probably, even they might not admit it, would actually probably like some help, like someone they can trust on the other side of the fence. And the OT guys obviously just need a plant that continues to run and they don't want it to stop because someone's running a backup at 2 o'clock in the morning and taking out their control system. So that's sort of the space I want to play in. And I think really at the moment the cybersecurity implications for control systems is just getting more and more serious.
Yes.
You know, the Colonial Pipeline event in North America recently when a gas pipeline was shut down through ransomware. Now, yes, it's under the cybersecurity bucket. Was it we have to start talking about whether it was deliberate attacks, inadvertent attacks, you know. This all has to come back to risk in the industrial world. You know, we talk about what's the likelihood, what's the risk, what's the consequence. But the problem we've got is most people just don't know where to start. They're not sure on what their posture is.
It's going to happen to them.
And I think the day is coming where critical infrastructure is loosely defined at the moment as, you know, power and water and those sorts of things. It's going to have to encompass our manufacturing capabilities, our food production capabilities. They'll become critical pieces of infrastructure for the country's economy. And I think sooner or later legislation is going to force some changes in this space that a lot of industries are going to wrestle to tackle. So I guess that's where we want to posture ourselves to try and be ahead of that curve and make that palatable as that journey unfolds, because I think it's going to unfold over the next few years and it'll be interesting to see where it all ends up. But
so there's definitely going to be enough work for you to do here in Australia then, and to sort of expand further overseas. Would you like to?
I mean, obviously with my background of doing work overseas, it's not something I'm particularly scared of taking on. I guess we use the term, as a startup, we've got to crawl before we walk and build some mass and build the team out. But I certainly wouldn't shy away from taking on work internationally if it came looking, or if we're able to secure it. It's been a valuable part of my career so far, so I certainly wouldn't shy away from it.
So can you talk to us about why you started a career in technology? What was your interest?
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of what advice you'd give to the younger generation studying today?
Definitely. And I think I don't really think I ever started a career in this game. I think I sort of fell into it. I was always that kid that wanted to understand how stuff worked. I had a tub of old circuit boards out of TVs in the bottom of the cupboard that I pulled apart. And to be honest, at that stage, I had no idea how they worked.
Yeah.
And I guess early on in sort of my teen years, you know, playing with computers at home, I was a Commodore 64 kid, and then, I started in that era.
I had one of those too.
Showing my age now.
We're the same vintage, obviously.
Yeah, so I started there, and I remember really clearly as a late teenager breaking mum and dad's shiny new computer. I don't even know if they know about this. Formatted the hard drive inadvertently and had to reinstall it. And I remember getting it up and running and putting it all back together. And I sort of had this moment of realization that there's some pretty smart people in this planet who build these very complex, clever bits of equipment, but they are human. And if they can figure it out, you should have a go too.
What was your favorite Commodore 64 game?
Oh, very good question. I think I had Ghostbusters on a cartridge, which I loved.
Mine was Clowns.
Oh, Clowns. There you go.
There was also a cassette tape that you could plug into it.
Yes.
But it never worked. I don't know whether you got yours to it.
Yeah, it was temperamental at best. I remember ours used to have to turn upside down, a whole cassette deck upside down, and then it would work.
I didn't try that.
My kids will never know that pain.
Spoiled brats.
Yeah, with their iPads and 4K TVs. So that was what sort of got me interested in technology, I guess. I went through high school, as most kids do, and had aspirations of moving off to uni, which I did, and did a bit of computer engineering.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate enough to secure an industrial electronics trade with the ASI business I mentioned earlier, which made technology all of a sudden very, very real and very, very hands-on. And the gentleman over there, Steve Mancinelli and Glenn Baptista, taught me a lot, but they taught me.
I know Glenn.
Yeah, another name.
Great. Yeah. Yep. Where's he these days?
I haven't crossed his path for a long time. I was only thinking the other day I should track him down.
He was at Peabody for a little while.
Steve was, I think. Steve Mancinelli was over there.
Yeah.
But they made the technology real. And you had to understand a circuit and diagnose it and chop chips off boards and solder them and burn your fingers in the process, of course. And so that really made the technology real for me. And it taught me that if you're willing to have a go and willing to put your hand up when you make a mistake, people will teach you. So I guess my advice to everybody, you've heard me speak of traveling overseas and taking those risks and those opportunities. If you're working wherever you are and you've been in an industry and someone's willing to back you for something that you think is a little bit bigger than you, then have a bit of faith in yourself. Someone else can see it in you, so have a go. Put your hand up when you don't know. Put your hand up if you make a mistake, but get out there and have a go, because you'll never regret it.
And you obviously started, you know, very much with the foundations first, and you mentioned before you very much were a generalist, and then sort of later in your career specialised. People are sort of specialising a bit sort of earlier in their career these days.
I think so. I guess I think you're quite right. I think. To be a good specialist, you can't be a blinkered specialist. I think the value that our business offers is the fact that we come from a very generalist industrial control system and automation background.
Yeah.
We understand those systems. We could take them on if we wanted to do them ourselves, but our speciality is making them work from a communications and security point of view. And I think that's our strength, and I think that's our value for clients, that we do have that understanding, and we're not going to push them down a route that's going to cause them pain.
Yeah, good.
Mm. And I think the only other bit of advice I give to everyone coming up, particularly in an industry technology game, is something someone said to me a long time ago, said, this game's full of smart people, and if you've got smart people, you can teach them lots of things. There's one thing that's really hard to teach, and it's attitude.
Yes. You have to be coachable, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Doesn't that, then.
That makes it very hard. You need to be willing to learn new skills and have a go, but attitude and personality are some of the hardest things to teach or change in a person. So be mindful of it. And it's certainly something that I had to learn along the way. Be thinking about what you're doing, thinking about how you're going to bolt in with that team, how you're going to bring value to that company. At the end of the day, that's why you're there. You're there to make the money.
If
they're making money, you'll make money. Yeah. So attitude goes a big way in this game, particularly in the industry arena.
And in Newcastle. You've had a really exciting career to date, and I've no doubt, sort of built some really strong networks that will, you'll probably still continue to work with these people for the rest of your career.
I would certainly hope so. Some of the customers we've been dealing with now, I've been dealing with since the very early days back in the Primatech era. Mm. I'm still working with them today, and as they take on upgrade projects and bits and pieces. So, yeah, very much pride myself on that and hope that continues.
Good. Mm. And what about sort of do you guys use any productivity tools to help you manage the projects?
Me and my business partner, Jess, we're both project managers at heart. So we'll run home to Gantt charts pretty quickly for planning out our workload and cash flows and everything else. We run home to those sorts of classical project management tools. I've seen in other businesses that I've managed, when you need to get to a pool of people delivering billable hours, you need to have a pretty solid handle on what those hours are for, where they're getting billed to, any gaps in those schedules. So I've used plenty of cloud-hosted resource management tools. My e-resource scheduler is one I've used a lot. Mm. Nice, simple interface, just shows you where people are booked and you can summarise your data and all that sort of stuff. So I guess at the end of the day, the engineer in me wants numbers to back up what I know. So I like those tools.
Good.
And I like being able to model them out and forecast and that sort of stuff. So.
And what's been the most challenging part about starting a business?
Taking the leap. Taking the leap to have a go, particularly I think you said earlier, you're in the middle of a pandemic. How are you going? That's probably the most daunting part. As well as getting, obviously Jess brings a wealth of experience around the financial side and the ERP management side, which is fabulous. Just taking that leap, I guess. Mm.
I thought about it for many years, and I always used the excuse that I was a single mother.
Yep.
And that it was too daunting.
Yep.
But again, did it in the middle of a pandemic, when I just never would have thought I would do that years ago.
Yeah, exactly right. Have you ever regretted it?
No.
I think you've had some sleepless nights, but never regretted it.
It's challenging, but love it. Yeah. It's the best decision ever made.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's what I hope for a new business is to enjoy the challenge, enjoy the chaos of it a little bit, enjoy getting out there and delivering work, and hopefully get the growth out of it and grow it into a business that people want to work in and have fun in the challenge too.
Yeah. Mm. And when you're sort of thinking about sort of hiring?
Well, really what we've got to do is grow our workload a little bit. We are effectively not seeking venture capital or anything to get us going. We've self-funded. So that obviously comes with, a slower growth curve. So we'd be looking to recruit probably or grow within the next 3 to 6 months, I guess, what we're forecasting now. So I don't think we'll stay this size for very long. Mm. And obviously keep the work coming in and keep the team having the capacity to make sure we're not dropping the ball for anybody.
Mm. Very exciting.
Mm, I hope so anyway.
And what about personal life? What do you do outside of work?
Outside of work, we're a bit of a blended family. We have four kids when we're at full complement, two boys, two girls from 9 through 14. But we do a fair bit of stuff outside. We're pretty lucky. We're based over in Stockton, so we've got beaches and rivers and all that sort of stuff at our disposal. I'm an old dirt bike rider at heart. So unfortunately, the bulk of the children have now been tarred with that brush. So that normally keeps me spinning spanners and maintaining motorbikes on weekends when I'm not doing other stuff. So, yeah.
Where do you go riding? Do you go up to Glenrock
You take the motorbikes out. We normally have to get out on private property with the kids being the age they are. So we're thankful. I grew up in the Hunter Valley originally, so I've still got some connections. I grew up in Muscle Rook originally.
Okay.
Don't hold that against me.
No, I won't.
You'd be justified.
No.
So we've still got access to acreage up there and a few other places around the traps, which is nice. Get out and go camping and all that sort of stuff. Get out of town. Unplug from the technology for a little while.
And do you sort of listen to any podcasts or do you like to read?
I like to listen to podcasts and I like to read. Unfortunately, the bulk of my downtime, cycle time is reading technical literature or, you know, white papers and that sort of stuff. So I guess, yes, so that sort of ticks that box. I've been keeping an eye on Nui Tech People for a while and the podcast you chuck up. So I do enjoy watching them. It's very interesting to see the breadth of industries and technologies and businesses that are in Newcastle.
It's a very
exciting
time in Newcastle, yeah.
So
lots of new businesses.
I'd like to have more time just for general podcasts, but unfortunately they're just not quite fitting into the Gantt chart at the moment.
And we're actually seeing a lot of businesses that the founders were from here and moved away and now wanting to set up technical teams here, which is really exciting.
It's
for
a
Newcastle.
Great news story for Newcastle. Yeah. And I mean, if nothing else, I mean, I'm amazed that I'm fortunate enough to come back and live in.
Actually, think one of the companies that we're working with at the moment, they're from the Hunter Valley too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Autopilot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they're a marketing automation platform.
Nice. There you go. Yeah. Newcastle's a pretty good place. If you can manage to end up back here and set your base up here, it's not a bad part of the world.
No, very lucky.
Yeah, very much so.
I won't ever leave.
No, it's not terrible, is it?
No.
No.
Well, it was really interesting to hear. You've had such an exciting career and worked in many interesting places. Mm. So, yeah, it was really great to hear your story today.
Thank you.
And wish you all the success for your business. And if I hear of anyone needing your services, I'll definitely
point them
refer them on. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing your business grow.
Yeah, and I hope you keep an eye out for people that might fit the brief of what we're doing.
I will. Yeah. I'm sure you know a lot of people as well.
Thank you very much for having me today. It's been good to come in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Nui Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.